money orders and us. Once again, thanks very much for coming. Today we're going to do an interesting exercise. We'll be looking at the State of Nation Address 2013 and what it directs us to do. But we'll be doing it in a very interesting way, because first we'll be getting our research unit in Parliament to share with us as to how they see it, what could be the implication to us just as a committee, a parliamentary committee. And then thereafter we'll be getting the department to take us through as to how they see the State of Nation Address, giving them directives on their work. Obviously, the basis for that is that the State of Nation Address, combined with a number of other instruments, such as the medium term budget policy strategy, have a tremendous influence and significance on our on the work that we do in energy. And I emphasize that we do, because whether it's the department itself or us as Parliament, we take cue from what the head of state is saying, how we should chart the way forward. I trust and hope that along the way, we will do our best to combine this roadmap, broad as it is, with the reports from the budget review process, the BRRR. At this stage in time, the research and the advisory unit are busy collating and seeing the extent to which the budget review has had an impact both on the department's work and also our work. Of course, at this stage in time, we are looking at the State of Nation Address, but I'm just highlighting those, but there will be a linkage at some stage. One of the things I want us to also be alert to is that not only should we be cognizant of issues that directly mention or affect the energy sector, but also we should look at issues that indirectly affect or influence energy. Because any economic growth, any issues around social transformation, be it housing, education, you name them, do have an indirect influence on energy. Whether we're expected to plan ahead, to up planning or supply, or to ensure there's policy refinement, or there's a program reward due to planned activities in other areas. Of particular significance is the infrastructure build plan. R1 trillion, all of which one way or another needs energy when doing the construction itself, and once the various components of the infrastructure are built, they will still need energy. But that's one interesting component which has both direct and indirect influence on energy. In fact, one of the SIPs, strategic infrastructure project, is directly around energy. I don't know which one, SIP 15? I don't know. or there are three major ones. I thought it was one, because I was invited to one. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but I thought it was just locked in one. But, honourable members, I'm just giving that so that we have a perspective. Yes, if I can condition you, what we're going to get today may sound rather woolly and broad, but at the end of the day, it's quite important because it creates a context. As we start unpacking things, as we start getting the annual plan of the department, we have to take cognizance of what was presented today. As we look at the MTF, the medium-term framework of the department, we also have to take into account as to the extent to which the State of Nation Address has in its totality influenced all those programs or instruments for the energy sector per se. Having said that, let me then ask the committee secretary to take us through the attendance, and then thereafter we will have the first presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies from honourable members, Honourable Kadere and Honourable Salau, who is currently in the provinces with constituency obligations to attend to. Honourable Smaller, who is up sick. And then Honourable Maloto, who is chairing the Standing Committee on the Board of General. And then also Mayor Matibela, requesting to be the 10:30 debate chair. And then also apologies from the Director General of the Department of Energy, my first minister of energy. I apologize because I am unable to take the meeting chair. Those are the apologies, Chair.
And Prof, also, he just indicated he'll have to leave a little bit earlier. I'm a bit concerned that our population will get depleted. Maybe one of these days we may look for another innovative, creative way of rehashing this. Fortunately, we are in a room which has video conferencing. So but we'll see that the Makubela might even sit in Swane and we'll link up. I feel strongly about this. I hope you agree with me on this. I feel strongly because it's pointless to be like a pack of fours in a rugby. Just go and push for the ball without understanding how the field is structured and the game plan. And amongst other things, State of Nation Address influences the game plan. You know. But obviously we've got other items to look into because pretty soon we'll be getting into ISMO. You know what happens when you start handling legislation. So if you could just keep that in mind, Committee Secretary, that we can just look for a creative afternoon whereby Team Energy from Swane could just link up with us, you know, and then we could just take an hour for those who have not been around. Because also it's nice for us as a committee, instead of some of the things, to address it, you know, as a full team, because I'm concerned today that we may be five, we may be six for now, but along this space of time we'll be getting depleted. In any case, without further ado, Mr. Mabota, can you take us through? For those who don't know him, this is the researcher of the Portfolio Committee for Energy. He's no longer new now. He's been here for a couple of months. Over to you, Tony.
Good morning, Honorable Sir, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be giving an overview of the research unit's take on the State of the Nation Address. I'll be talking about the overview of my presentation. I'll be talking about briefly the remarks from the President about SONA, introduction to the SONA. I'll talk about the key strategic objectives that have an impact on energy highlighted by the President. And then I'll talk about each of the objectives and the impact thereof on energy. and then I'll look at the last year's zona to see, to trace the progress in terms of the implementation in what was raised. And then I'll conclude by highlighting some implications for Parliament for the 2012 State of the Nation address. Just as an introductional remarks from the President, you'll recall that he focused on the five national priorities, which is education, health, fight against crime, job creation, rural development, and land reform. And the reference point for the State of the Nation address was the National Development Plan, which is a vision for the country for the next 20 years. What this means is that activities of government and the general public would have to ensure that the activities align with the National Development Plan. In terms of the strategic objectives that I picked up that have a direct impact on energy, I've picked up urbanization, economic growth and job creation, electrification, sustainable energy or renewable energy. I chose to use sustainable energy because sometimes there is a confusion between renewable energy and sustainable energy, so I've just used the sustainable energy term for this reason. Then I'll go through each objective to highlight what the President said and what the Department is currently doing with regards to each objective that has an impact on energy. The President talked about urbanization. He highlighted that about 63% of the population is living in urban areas. I mean, is living in urban areas, and is projected to increase to 70% by 2030. The impact of this has an impact at the government level, particularly the municipalities, because they would have to cater for the growing population. As you know that, I mean, with the growing urban population, there is also a spread of informal settlements. So municipalities would have to provide services to the informal housing sector as well. One of the services being the provision of energy services. In response to that, in terms of providing services to informal settlements, the Department of Energy developed a policy guideline for the electrification of informal settlements. So this means the electrification of informal settlements is supported at the government level. But however, there are challenges in terms of electrifying informal settlements. From the workshops and meetings and site visits that I've done in 2010 and 2011, exploring the issue of electrifying informal settlements, I found that municipalities find it difficult to electrify informal settlements. Reasons cited by the municipal officials is that providing services to informal settlements, but particularly electricity, falls beyond the normal standards of providing services to households. So it's a difficult area for them. Another reason cited was that there is a regulatory issue, because as an engineer, you cannot just go and electrify an informal settlement. If you do electrify an informal settlement and there is a problem, then you will be accountable for whatever happens, being deaf, etc. There are few municipalities that have electrified informal settlements in South Africa, so this is an area that needs to be looked at as well. In terms of social planning, I did talk about the fact that people are moving into urban areas, so the increase of people in urban areas would result as well in the increase in energy demand. To cater for those things, programs such as energy efficiency are important. Introducing the concept of a compact city, where you encourage densification, the use of non-motorized transport, etc. And then the President also talked about economic growth and job creation, which also does have an impact on energy. He mentioned that, the National Development Plan states that we need to create 11 million jobs by 2030. But to be able to do that, the economy has to grow by like 5.4%. currently we're sitting at 2.1%, of which it's not favoring the conditions in which we want to be in 2030 years' time. And he emphasized, government, that there needs to be a partnership between the private, the business, and the private sector in order for us to be able to meet the 11 million desired job creation. He emphasized as well he did acknowledge that state-owned enterprises do have internships, learnership projects. There is a direct link between skills development and employment, employability. So to be able to get a job, one has to have some form of experience, because usually inexperienced and unskilled individuals are regarded as a risky in terms of the job market. So the Department of Finance is doing some work around the issue of skills development through its CITAS and other means, as well as with its entities. However, the president emphasized the need for these sort of initiatives to be increased. With regards to electrification, he mentioned that 85% of households are electrified compared to 63% in 2000. This is quite a remarkable achievement through the National Integrated Electrification Program. However, the problem still lies with those who do not have access to electricity. How do you cater for those that do not have electricity? Because the areas that do not have access to electricity is mainly those who live in rural areas and urban informal settlements. So rural areas are the areas that are still not easy to electrify. So provision of alternative energy services in the meantime is crucial for those individuals who do not have access to electricity. In response to that, the Department of Energy introduced the free basic alternative energy policy. However, from the briefings that were received at the beginning of this year on free basic alternative energy is that it is difficult, municipalities are finding it difficult to implement the policy. Reasons cited for the difficulty in implementing the policy include, amongst others, the fact that the human capacity within the municipality to administer the project, as well as the absence of an intelligent framework register, the national framework. So municipalities do define themselves by themselves, or who is the poorest of the poor, and it becomes difficult to identify the right beneficiary. So there is an issue with the policy. The intention is good, but there is a challenge that needs to be looked at. The last objective that I picked up, which is sustainable energy or renewable energy, like I've explained, using sustainable energy, because sometimes solar heaters are not regarded as renewable, so they are classified differently sometimes. So I've just used sustainable energy for that reason. As you may recall, in terms of renewable energy, the department has a policy on renewable energy, which has a target to provide 10 gigawatt hour of electricity from final energy consumption by 2030. I'm not sure where we are in terms of the progress in achieving this target, but I'll leave it at that. In responding to the target, to the renewable energy policy, the department also has set a target to install around 1 million solar water heaters by 2014-2015. As you may recall, the president highlighted that 215,000 solar water heaters have been installed as of January this year. However, with this pace, I'm not sure if we will reach the 1 million target, but I stand to be corrected on that. With regards to renewable energy, the president mentioned that contracts to the value of 47 billion have been signed for the renewable energy program. 28 projects in wind, solar, and small hydro in four provinces. He also mentioned that over 400 million national grant fund investments in green economy projects already been approved under the 800 million national grant fund approved last year. So this is a right. This is a great improvement or shift in terms of renewable energy market. But the question is this would this encourage more investment in renewable energy, etc. And then progress on issues made raised in the 2010 State of the Nation address. As you may recall, the president announced a plan to shift transportation of coal from road to rail in Mpumalanga to protect provincial roads. There is progress with this regard, given that he mentioned that the construction of Machuba coal line rail has begun. It's about to begin. And there was also a mention about Prasa and Transnet who committed billions of rand on commuter and rail network. This is a good initiative in terms of encouraging people to move from the use of private transport to public transport, because a good commuter network system would encourage people to use it. Therefore, contributing to the reduction in carbon emissions. In last year's Zona, President mentioned that he was going to ask, it's a quote, to ask Eskom to seek options on how the price of electricity requirements may be reduced over the next 3 years in support of economic growth and job creation. Eskom responded to this because the initial tariff last year was 25%, but it was then reduced to 16%. But the discussion is going on the current 16%, but I won't comment on that. He also mentioned investment in renewable energy last year, particularly solar energy. He highlighted as a key objective, a strategic objective. As I've mentioned before, 315 solar waters have been installed, but the question remains, are we going to reach the 1 million target by 2015? Then what are the implications for Parliament in all this? This is all based on the key objectives that I've discussed before. So the role of Parliament would be to interrogate the strategic plans and budget for the DOE, and Parliament needs to consider whether these align appropriately with the National Development Plan. Also, the Portfolio Committee on Energy needs to review the energy-related aspects of the NDP and form a view on how well they are reflected in plans and reports of DOE and its activities and its entities. Also, Parliament must continue to monitor the implementation of solar water heaters to ensure progress on implementation, as I've highlighted before, that the target is, I'm not sure if the target is reachable. We also should monitor the Parliament should also monitor the provision of energy services, particularly the implementation of free basic alternative energy and free basic electricity. As I've mentioned the challenges earlier on these policies, because we need to revisit the idea of developing a household or integrated energy strategy that was recommended in one of the public hearings beginning of this year. Also, with regards to the NDP, during the consultation workshops, there was a concern raised around the NDP that there was a disjunction between the chapter on energy and the low carbon and the transition to the low carbon. So, as Parliament this should be explored further. Okay, thank you, sir.
Short and sweet. But I don't know, with the document that we have, we're missing out some of the few points that we're raising. It is juncture one. Oh, here is the end. I'm sorry. Yeah. Honorable members, questions, clarity. Honorable
Machiavelli.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not sure how we're going to process this document, but when I look through it, I mean, the interesting thing is that the NDP kind of features large in terms of the SONA and in terms of us having to analyze our words in terms of that. But you don't go into the details of what gets said in the NDP. And part of what gets said in the NDP, in which I would like to question the department around as well, is obviously the issue around nuclear and how we need to look at, how we need to develop a financial feasibility study into the nuclear program. And I'd be interested to see if the department's done any work on that and how they're going to progress. What also gets said in the NDP is the issue around formulating a plan B. So if we don't go the nuclear route, will we go another route, and whether we've got that in place. And I think that all speaks to the bigger issue, though, of the IRP and the review of the IRP. And this is something which the department said would happen, well, in fact, the minister said would happen by March this year. And I'm just interested what the progress is on the IRP, because that will give us some kind of direction as to what is happening with the nuclear program, what is happening with our future build program. And I'm just very interested to hear whether any work has been done on that, because I think that that's the central thrust of what came out of the SONA for me, and I'll be interested to hear the department's views on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. That's quite informative. And I just want I'm just worried about the free alternative basic electricity, because the president has created a platform for the municipalities to have people to look at the poorest people of the country. We've got CDWs all over, and I just wonder what is their job, because their job is to help the municipality to identify the poor people where the free basic electricity should go to. Thank you.
Mr. Mabot, I assume that's all for now. If you could just respond.
Okay. Good morning. Just one or two questions around the CETAs. And the fact that we have representation on, let me just see what the names of the boards are, the chemical industry, education, and the energy and water sector. I just want to know how effective we are in our participation, and do we have any stats on those kinds of things? And then the age-old concern about the municipalities and the lack of capacity in municipalities, and how does one expect the municipalities to roll out a different program that is being set for them in all kinds of spheres, biofuels, the solar geysers and all that, when really there's a lack of capacity? Doesn't that just say that the Department of Energy is setting itself up for failure? There are quite a few other questions I'd like to ask, but I just want to see what the department's responses are, particularly on Honourable Hailing's question, because it will lead to other questions later. Thanks, Chair.
The department, not Mr. Mabot. Mr. Mabot is an honourable researcher for South African, for the Parliament of South Africa. I think we just have to make that distinction. Guanini is going to have it hot under his collar. Prof.
Yes, thank you, sir. I think the professor raised a number of questions which refer to the department. I hope the department will be able to respond to those. But they are left hanging. Like, for example, the 315,000. On slide 8, on page 4, the researcher refers to contact to the value of
It's technology fighting with itself.
In that slide 8, the researcher is referring to contracts to the value of 47 billion. I'm assuming that that's 12 billion rand. In the last paragraph, he's also referring to over 400 million national green fund investment. 400 million what? Are those grants again? If you could put them there so that we don't assume. Again, on your slide 10, you were saying during the NDP consultation workshop, a concern was raised that there is a disjunction between the chapter on energy and the transition to a low carbon. I'm interested how I wish you lifted that so that we do not assume that you understand that disjunction, so that we can, if it needs to follow it up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll first respond to the Honourable Flau's question. Thank you for the clarity. On right then, the distance between the NDP, between the low carbon and transition and the transition to low carbon and the energy chapter, is the concern that was raised is that energy and low carbon, they should speak to each other, but there was no connection, there was a little connection between the two within the document. So that was the sense I'm referring to. And then Mema Tiba, with regards to SBAE and why it is not...
Mema Tiba.
Oh, Mema Tiba. I thought I'm learning, I'm here. One of the, you talked about the CWs, but the other challenge is not only the admin side of providing, of rolling out the three basic alternative energy. The other is finance, because the three basic alternative energy money comes through the equitable share from the National Treasury. So it's for all the basic services, such as water and electricity. So when it comes to the allocation of funds for the three basic alternative energy, municipalities tend to allocate only for the three basic electricity, not three basic alternative energy. So that's one big challenge. So there were also some requests from the municipalities for the three basic alternative energy money to be ring-fenced, but I don't think policy-wise one can do that just for the three basic alternative energy. There are some municipalities that are currently rolling out three basic alternative energy. For example, there is one there are some municipalities that are rolling out three basic alternative energy policy. Some started, but they stopped. The reasons cited were the finance, the human capacity. You kind of need a champion within the municipality to kind of lead the project. Otherwise, if there is no champion within the municipality, the rolling out three basic alternative units would remain a challenge. I think it also touches to Ms. Figas, to Honourable, the issue around capacity. Thank you, sir.
Any follow-up? Honourable Fading?
No, are we going to rely on the department after that?
Yeah. You can do so far. All you have done is to be an obstalker. I think, let me say from my side, in terms of the implications, all I can say is that whatever you've said there is implications, particularly number 10. Slide number 10 is that we need to convert that to task for the very research department. If you say Parliament needs to align to see whether there's an alignment, you have to take that out as a task. If you need to review the energy-related aspects of NDP, take up as a task. In terms of monitoring the solar water heater rollout, I'm sure honourable members will agree that we need to hold hands with the NCOC select committee, because they've done some work there, so that we complement them. Also, the free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy, we've addressed them. We still have to make recommendations once the reports come out on that. It's more on our shoulders than anything. The last one, once again, research, you've got to elaborate on that. This is a PowerPoint presentation. So you have to elaborate on the disjuncture. Of course, it's a concern raised by some people, and would obviously expect also the department, you know, to pronounce itself on that. Not necessarily now, you know, because this is quite an intricate issue. I remember one other thing that just springs in my mind is the infrastructure build plan. I don't remember us, you know, addressing ourselves fully on it as to what do we see as energy issues there, and to what extent are we happy about this location? Just to have an understanding, you know, because it has just been brought to my attention that there are 3 6 since 17. 8, I don't know which other one, but and 10, SIP 8 and 10 are very clear about, you know, energy, they are even called the energy SIP, sorry, 8, 9, 10, 8, 9, 10, so I trust and hope we'll pick up a day one time, team energy, that we go to town, you know, in dealing with them. Alright, thanks very much for now. I think, honourable members, this is a start. I hope in future, once we handle this, so obviously next year, whoever is around, will expect research department to go a little bit more in depth and be a little bit diverse on issues around this. What strikes me more than anything is the fact that the research has been able to whatever extent, pick up issues that need and warrant the attention of the Parliament to consider. And of course, we welcome the department also to comment and respond to some of the things that have been raised by the researcher, and together with the questions that were triggered from the members. Otherwise, thanks very much. Shall we invite the department now to come over?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We are going to...
Just before that, gentlemen from the department, can I appeal, man? Much as I know you're under pressure, your hands are full. It's rather disarming and compromising our input, particularly the quality of our input and engagement, if we get judgments on the last minute. Well, we're not saying this for the first time, and we will keep on reminding you of that. Please, try your best that we get stuff. If we are under pressure, which I understand from time to time, at least 48 hours, 2 days before, so that we can just run our eyes, go and look at other pieces of information if we want to refresh our minds on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. Good morning. I need to first apologize for our principal. I know the apologies have been indicated, but I just wanted to once again indicate and also apologize for Mr. Apane, who is the DDG who leads policy and planning, who could not be part of the team this morning. Chairperson, we acknowledge the fact that we were late, and we would want to offer an unreserved apology to yourself and the committee for this. Chairperson, we've come to the committee, and in preparing for this, we did have a difficulty. And the difficulty was that, one, in our preparations, we also wanted to await the response of the president to the debate and see whether there would be any new directives from the president, which would then have to be factored into our presentation. And that did present a bit of a difficulty for us to finish on time. The second issue, Chairperson, is that we don't want to come to the committee and say things that perhaps in the Minister of Finance's speech next week, those things will not be catered for. And that also did present a little bit of a challenge.
Like that one.
The third one, we also had to guard against as officials taking the thunder of the minister in terms of announcements that may come in terms of the programs from the budget vote. So we had to factor all these things, and it was quite an exercise. But what I can say is that we've tried to prepare some slides, which we will be talking to, and Dr. Barnard will do a lot of that. Given that there's been a presentation before, I think a lot of the introduction on what the president did indicate we will skip. But I think what we can say as the department is that our programs are aligned to the National Development Plan. Those that are not aligned, we are going to do our best to align them. But Chairperson, we don't want to also come here and pretend as if there's business as usual globally, regionally, and nationally. The energy landscape is changing, and is changing all the time, and we need to take that into account. I wanted to share with the committee also just the issues on the horizon that we have to take into account as we respond to all the directives. I think the immediate one is the impact of the growth that is expected now in the U.S. as well as China. The impact that is going to have on our own growth from an energy perspective. One, what we see on the horizon is that the fuel prices are going to challenge us. And that is going to have an impact on the rest of the economy. I think it is common knowledge now that in the next price change for fuel, for example, we will see a massive increase that probably we have not seen ever. And that is not something that is within our control, Chairperson, because as a country on fuel, we are a price taker. I don't believe that we will see an increase less than 80 cents in petrol in the next month. It won't be less than 80 cents, the increase. So what does that do to the plans that are outlined? What does that do to the economy, you know, to job creation? It will have an impact. And what does that give us comfort is that we don't believe that if the oil prices continue going the way they are going, we will have a reprieve, in the foreseeable future. Linked to that, Chairperson, is the electricity price trajectory, which also we have to confront. And our plea is that we need this committee to basically the wisdom of the committee to also weigh in on the solutions that we need for both, for all energy price issues. One of the interventions that at some point we'll bring to the committee is the fact that on the fuel price, for example, the fleet of South Africa needs to be dieselized, what is called dieselization of the fleet. I think that the South Africa's, you know, we love petrol vehicles. And yet the diesel technologies are more efficient, and that is something that we need to be looking at. For example, why is it that the taxis, I believe, for example, that the dieselization of taxis is a must, because that begins to reduce the imports, for example, of petrol, and that impacts on the balance of payments, then impact on, you know, the currency and all of that. So these are some of the things that we would want support and the boldness of the committee to begin to push these matters, because we have seen that in the NDP we have to grow, and we have to grow at 5% if the objectives, minimum 5% if the objectives are going to be achieved. And fuel is important in actually enabling that growth. The other intervention on this matter is that we cannot postpone domestic production of oil and gas any longer. We need to find our own oil. I think we need to make sure that the companies that have been given exploration rights by the Minister of Mineral Resources actually are exploring, because we believe that the potential is there. The technologies have developed now to such an extent that you know, even our deep shores, you would be able to actually look for hydrocarbons and find them. So I think that the push for domestic production of oil and gas needs to be supported, and I think the committee needs to be key, perhaps in consultation with the Committee on Mineral Resources. This can no longer be postponed. Linked to that, from our side, the regulatory framework for gas is going to be reviewed, because we believe that needs to lay the basis for increased use of natural gas in the economy. I think we did indicate to the committee that the gas amendment bill will be coming, and that requires priority. But there is a linkage. There is a linkage between this bill and the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill. There is a linkage, direct linkage, because
between which bills?
Between the gas amendment as well as the MPRD amendment.
Yes,
especially
yes.
If
I know he's making a presentation, but why I'm jumping is because last, was it this week?
Yes.
When they gave us an update,
yes.
The petroleum deal had disappeared from the screen of the
This is mineral MPR.
That's gone, my minute. Because it's just about petroleum. Okay, no, that's fine. It's fine. Sorry to distract you.
Perhaps just to explain, Chair, if we're going to be looking for gas in the country, the MPRDA amendment will need to be taken through its paces and to ensure that it is enacted. So I think the discussion between the two committees is going to have to be key. We need to ensure that there is robust debate on all these changes to the regulatory framework. Because also, one of the things the NDP indicates is that we should look at the changes that we make to regulatory frameworks and look at the unintended consequences of those changes and the timing of those changes. So I think it's going to be important that these two bills, if anything, by the end of this year, hopefully, we are hoping that they would have gone through, because then we begin to encourage the exploration for gas within our shores and ensure that actually we then use the gas. And I'm not just talking here about shale gas. I'm talking about, you know, natural gas in the form that is not trapped in rocks. taking a lot of time on these matters, but I think it is important for me to indicate that as we do all these things, these are some of the areas that we are going to require the support and wisdom of the community. The NDP also indicates that the liquid fuels infrastructure is constrained, and that at some point a decision will have to be taken on refining. That's the one direction from there. The second one is that the existing refinery infrastructure must be upgraded. Now, what are we doing about that? We are at the final stages of the development of the 20-year liquid fuels infrastructure plan. It will be out this year, during the first half, well within the first half of the year. It then will allow or enable debate on options on whether, on what we do with the existing infrastructure, but also what we do in terms of the timing on a new refinery. And I think it is important also for me to just indicate, I know that this is not about liquid fuel, it's about energy. But Dr. Barnard will talk about the rest of the energy. When we talk about refineries and the need for refining, we're not just talking about petrol, diesel, and jet fuel. We're also talking about other products that come out of a refinery. Key amongst them are your lubricants, which have become a very big source of income. But also, because of the economic downturn in Europe, there is a less demand for lubricants in Europe. Where do you then take your lubricants? You take your lubricants to Africa, to South Africa. What does that do to the local manufacturing of lubricants? It makes them uncompetitive. And what does that do? Because you see now, to sustain jobs in Europe, they would come here at a discount, and then our guys are unable to compete, and then the lube plants in Durban, they shut down. The president says we must create jobs. If we shut down lube plants, we are losing jobs. But it's not because of the framework here, it's because of a downturn in Europe, which leads to a glut of lubricants. But the situation in Europe can change. What happens if you shut down your lube plants and Europe, the economy is humming again? What then happens is the imports that you are relying on, they dry up because now the demand is back in Europe, and then you sit with some challenges. But that is a debate perhaps for another day. But it is an important debate. Our lubrication plants in Durban are suffering, and there is a challenge on jobs. And once you lose that capacity, it's difficult to rebuild. They also need to be modernized, because lubricants are also getting more and more advanced. That's why you have longer intervals between services in motor vehicles. It's mainly because of the advances in lubricants.
the NDP, and I'm stressing NDP because the president opened with the indication of on the NDP as the main driver of our program. The NDP calls for integrated energy planning to be strengthened. Now, we did commit that the IEP will be ready. And once again, I think I can state here that the IEP, we intend to ensure that it is out to start the debate that is called for in the NDP on the energy trajectory of South Africa. That will be out also in our view during the first half of this year. I'm going to move towards closure from my side, but Dr. Barnard will continue. At some point, Mr. Mguni, who is our DDG for corporate services, will talk about the capacity of the department, because the NDP also talks about the capacity of the state. And there is a plan to deal with that. And I think he can elaborate on that. But what is important in the energy space is that we need depth. We need depth, and we also need tenure. I'm not trying to say that I need to be where I am for a long period, but I think what is necessary is for people to really dig deep into the field and make sure that they understand, because there is a tendency in the whole economy for upward mobility, which does not allow for in-depth understanding of the disciplines that people are in. So one of the interventions that has got to be made is how do we ensure that we develop specialists that stay in their job and not always aspire to be managers and all kinds of other, you know, just chasing after, you know, monetary and titles. I think that it is something that the whole economy, in our view, needs to be looking at. And anecdotes. The challenge with the, I need to be very careful, with mobile devices, is that you can get information, anecdotal information. Somebody said this in a conference, and then you come here to the committee and you repeat it, and then you are a specialist. I think we need to make sure that we develop, you know, people who really have a passion also for the sectors that they are in. Chairperson, the other issue is safety in energy. And I don't believe that we spend a lot of time on this. Safety not only of installations, but safety of the products during transit, safety of the service station, safety of the workers, safety of, and security. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because we are seeing an increase in vandalism and theft in our IECs, particularly in the last 6 months. We've seen a huge increase in vandalism at IECs. We are still trying to understand what is going on. But
what that means then is that we have programs that are meant to benefit the community, but then they are vandalized. The stock is taken out and so on. So we need to be looking at issues of safety. Theft of fuel during transit makes the companies, wholesale companies and the manufacturers, you know, they lose along the way, and it impacts on efficiency. So we need to be, we'll be focusing a lot on that. We already have strong relationships with the security structures, and we'll be enhancing those. The second last issue, the last issue, is that on the issue that was raised on FTE, I'm tempted to say that there is a need to break silos within the governance structure. Silos. Silos between national, provincial, and local governments. And we need to do what is called for in the energy policy white paper. Because there is a need. That need was identified there already. You need to go back and look and because the cooperative governance that was called for in the energy policy white paper, I believe that what was proposed as a model there is something perhaps we need to revisit and say, have we actually tried this, and couldn't we use it for FPE? I will close by saying something that may sound controversial and say, I don't think, Chairperson, we can lose the opportunity that is presented by shale gas. I think that this country has found ways of dealing with all kinds of challenges in as far as hazards are concerned. There is a regulatory mechanism. It's just that we need to make sure that we develop people who are going to be able to apply this. And I think this committee needs to also work closer with the Minerals Resources Committee, because that's where the drive for developments on shale gas will be coming from. But the need for the gas is in energy. But the regulatory framework sits in mineral resources. So there is a need for the two committees to ensure that this happens sooner. It will change the landscape completely, because we can then develop gas to liquid plants. Then we don't have to import as much crude oil as we are importing. If we make use of that gas, then Eskom doesn't have to burn diesel, which comes at a cost, at a higher cost. They then would be able to use a gas. So I think I would end there, but to say that we are alive to the directives of the NDP and we are responding appropriately. I think we are well on our way. But Dr. Barnard will talk about the rest of the energy landscape. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ndlamakhubu.
may have not seen our program for this term, but I don't remember, around the 19th of March, we'll be having a joint session on shale gas with quite a number of committees, not just the minerals and mineral resources, but a whole range of other committees that have a direct water, science and technology, trade and industry, so that we look at shale gas from different angles, you know, because we are beyond moratorium now. So we've got to start, you know, addressing it, you know, in a meaningful way. So, to quite an extent, we're on top of it. Putvus.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I think the idea was that, except for what is in the State of the Nation address being specifically linked to energy, that we also then gave a broader background against the introduction by Mr. Nkubela. I think my presentation will focus specifically on issues that we extracted from the State of the Nation address, and also for us as a first. So what we did, we literally were sitting there with a tweezer and we were pulling out everything that had energy and common relationship. So if we did miss something, our apologies, but we're willing to address it if it's been pointed out to us. The content of the presentation has been given there, and given the background in terms of the very good summary we received earlier this morning, I'm going to, with your permission, to skip just the introduction, because this is written on its own, not realizing in which context it would be presented. So the introduction has already been given. The specific remarks from our president regarding the thrust for the country go has been summarized here. I'm going to skip that because it's actually very well been dealt with in the presentation by Mr. Maguera. So I'm going to skip that and just go to see what sort of various activities are linked to different programs in Department of Energy. The Integrated Energy Plan is under Program 2, the Energy Efficiency is Program 2 also. Implementation of the Renewable Energy and the Integrated Resource Plan is indicated as Program 2, it's correct, plus Program 6, and then Electricity and Electrification is actually Program 6, so there's just a slip up there with some of the program numbers. Hydrocarbons is Program 3, Nuclear is Program 4, and Clean Energy is Program 5. And then under job creation, it's a cross-cutting issue, so it's not only to a specific program. I think if we start off, and the first couple of slides is just sort of background information, just to use as a platform in terms of we're going to discuss, according to us, the 21 specific references that the President made to energy and cross-cutting issues that have relevance to the Department of Energy. Before going there, just some background. I think in terms of the background itself, if we're talking about an integrated energy plan for the country, that includes also the IRP, so it's on energy in general. We know that for electricity generation currently, we have an installed capacity of around 1,000 megawatts, but under the current circumstances, our economy is actually growing, but our demand is also growing with it, but our generation capacity is under constraint. So hence why we had to venture into a growth program, which also then leads to our tariff increases, price increases that's currently being discussed. We know that we have currently two major power station projects that's undergo, and we know also that there is some labor disputes that is hampering the finalization and the finishing off of that. I think it's also important is what is the ratio between our supply and demand in the country with respect to electricity generation. We see that it has decreased from 2010 till now from 15% to 10%. And given our specific manner in which we generate electricity with 94% coal-based, and right now, as we speak, our demand and supply balance is dipping far beyond that for two reasons, Chair, unfortunately. The one is with the severe storms we had and the floods in the northern parts of the country, the Gabora Basa high voltage lines have been damaged. Some of them still lying in riverbeds. We're not receiving the full capacity from Gabora Basa. On top of that, yesterday, work unit number two electrically tripped. And so right now we are in constraint in terms of severe constraint in terms of our supply. And I just mentioned this to put in context. You know, that's why we have to rush with our build program. I think it's also important that this being said, that the whole electricity infrastructure development is solely being focused on the broader issues that's been raised by the President in the State of the Nation address. So I don't think there's any misalignment with that. But I think that being said, it's also important that we just specify specific aspects around what we are talking about. Chair, as you have rightfully mentioned in your introduction about 1 trillion rand of infrastructure program, we refer to it 850 million, doesn't matter, it's close enough. I think it's one thing just to talk about generation, but it's also other aspects about energy efficiency. And to also broaden your excess base of energy, but also broaden your energy generation mix. And all that's been covered through different programs. Just quickly summarize there. But just to before I step off from this slide, when talking about access to energy, it's one thing to say we have this huge building program, a beautiful renewable energy program that's currently starting off. But if we don't have the means to distribute and to bring that energy, specific electricity, to the end user, the domestic, commercial, industrial users, we haven't succeeded as a country and as a department. So we have to focus on that, and specifically on our electricity distribution infrastructure, a little bit more about it, but like the Chair remembers. But then also we need to also ensure reduction of the impact of the increase in electricity and energy prices. And that's the last bullet, Chair, that and there's been questions been asked around it, so I will also come back to that a bit later. But programs are in place in terms of solar water user program, also the fee-based electricity, but I will come back to some of the challenges around that. I think just a quick highlight around our renewable energy build program. This is just a summary of the first two windows around solar. People are concentrating pretty much on wind, and my apologies, I just noticed that a wind slide haven't been incorporated yet. But just an indication between the major three components on the window one and two. Remember, window one has financial closure been reached already. Window two is in a couple of weeks away, but 19 preferred bidders have been appointed. Under window one, the 28 successful IPPs, because we can refer now to them as IPPs, have started. Majority of them have started. There's one or two that can't get off the ground. Some of them are the specific two are referring to. I think it's important that just indicate how one action can have negative effect. One of the IPPs signed a back-to-back agreement with one of our major steel manufacturers in the country. In Vereeniging, last weekend, that whole plant burned down. So they're 3 months behind in terms of supplying of their steel. And just see the amount of steel that needs to go into these construction is enormous. I just checked quickly in terms of the wind farms. In the first two windows, 1,200 megawatts of wind generation that's been allocated. If you convert that in hard hardware, it boils down to around about 600 high masks that need to be erected. It boils down to 270,000 tons of concrete just for those first cylinders. It reverts back to more than 4,000 abnormal loads that need to be transported. I'm not talking about normal truckloads, but abnormal loads that are special licenses need to be. Just to give you impact, just on the wind for those projects that have been assigned. On the CSP, the Concentrated Solar Program, there's just a summary, and I said unfortunately the wind one falls out. But in the first two windows, the total combined generation capacity that have been allocated is 2,600 megawatts, of which 1,200 is allocated to wind. I just also want to mention that of those 28 IPPs, the majority of them we have launched officially. There's still a couple that have to be launched, so we're running around three country launching and doing short turning, but it's very important in terms of bringing this new development to the deep rural areas of our country, and to see the excitement, but not only that, to also see what it means already on the ground, what's happening there. So I think also important is that in terms of the context of our future build program, just a summary also of our IRP, but specifically those projects that's been under section 34 of special determination by the minister that have been highlighted and been announced in December last year around co-generation and additional PV and wind and CSP and also in imported hydro. That's already been determined, and we're busy with the finalization in terms of the request for bids for those. So why I mention this is that in parallel to our renewable energy program, this is also happening, and that will be in the newspapers in the near future. Talking about the distribution side, we have reported also this committee on the ADEM program, where it's a program to assist municipalities in a more holistic manner with the distribution challenge. We have received a small portion of funds to run it as pilot in six municipalities in three metros. And this is just the way we're going to do it. And very quick, it's not a handout, it's not a grant and we're going to walk away from it. It's a very specific handheld process we're going to implement to ensure that this funding is going to have the maximum impact on the ground. If you ask a municipality or metro what is your needs, they will immediately come down with a truckload of requests. I always joke, and it's like asking a matric learner just before the end exams, you know, what's your problem with maths? He says, you know, everything in maths. In the same year, everything is a problem. So we digested that, and they need to supply us with master plans, and then to come up with priorities 1, 2, and 3. And how we're going to do it is we're going to concentrate on 1 or 2 of those specific, most highly impact contributions that we make. It will be overlooked by a steering committee, technical steering committee, and consists of various entities like NERSA, like the DBSA, like ourselves, and also private consultant groups, to ensure that before money is transferred to the municipality or metro, that project is technically being cleared and all the necessary procurement work have been done. So that's just a high level how that will be done. I think we can also just on the same level talk quickly about the solar water heater program, phase two of this program. I think it was made totally different from the phase one program, is where phase one was around installment and access to solar water heaters, where phase two has that component but added to it also the localization manufacturing of the products locally. And this slide is only, and I want to stress, only looking at increase the local content. It doesn't give us a rundown how it will be implemented on the roofs of houses. That's a different slide. But just to also give you a background of why it is slowly out of the blocks, because the fact that we need to, it's one thing to say you want to localize, but to get your local industry up and running to be part of that is a different one. And then secondly, to ensure that industry and the products is nationally acceptable, because we had experience, we needed knowledge in a phase one where we concentrated on numbers and rollout, not so much on quality. We bend our fingers. And this is an example of why we need to make sure that the product is South African applicable and according to South African standards. Hence why the SABS have to approve and to also have to develop new standards for that. Then also to ensure that we establish a manufacturing industry built around this. And actually that doesn't take off 1 or 2 months, so we are running slightly behind, but what I can give assurance that in the end of the day, it will be a legacy that we left with the country, not to only produce these systems, but also secondary products that will come from this. So this is in terms of where we are, without going into detail, the agreement between us and ESCOM, which is going to be the implementer of the policies of DOE, but also it's also the department's responsibility to ensure that we direct also the manufacturing of these goods in a certain direction, and hence why also the implementation agreement have been referred to. And then between the manufacturers and ESCOM to ensure that they on ESCOM's supply database, which we have that we have been approved. Chair, I'm going to move into really the specifics of what we extracted from the State of the Nation address. So, and I'm going to, I know these tables is busy. So what I'll do is I'll just sort of summarize some of it, and I'll try to go word by word, if you allow me. I think what's important in the first one that we extracted is the fact that the President referred to under the National Development Plan that the one of the fundamental pillars is a job creation. And then in that, we then extracted what does it mean for us as a department. We started off with, for instance, the nuclear build program. If the nuclear build program is taking off as being foreseen in the RFP, it could mean up to 25,000 jobs that have been created. And there's various levels where it can be created, at what period it will be created, but that's what we're talking about, so we just highlight that. That's given a certain percentage of localization. I also want to mention, although I did make the presentation, Chair, my honourable colleagues is also with me here to take some of the very specific questions. If we talk about the renewable energy build program, the IPP build program, these in total in this whole program, as been foreseen in different windows, will result in 20,000 direct jobs, some of them permanent, the majority of them temporary, then also a lot direct jobs, and then also indirect jobs of in the vicinity of 10,000. That's from the point of view of using the bids that we received, but also using international benchmarking this. And it's also important that just for now already on the ground, and that sentence doesn't say it very well, the first sentence on the right-hand side on the impact, is that right now there's already 900 direct and about 1,200 indirect jobs being created, as we sit here. And the contracts have only been signed in November. Now, we know December is a dead time, and your construction company is only starting in middle of January. But right now, that's what we have already on the ground. And that's just increasing. And if you, I'm running twice a week at one of these sites, and it's just incredible to see. You know, I was Tuesday in Moltino, small town, northern part of Eastern Cape. Now, previously, they were renowned for, I think, Mrs. Ball's first been made Blatjan there. And now they have one of the biggest wind farms in the country being erected there. And just see that deep rural areas, how many people are working. It's like ants running around and vehicles moving up and down. And for years there was no economic development. I think that's the beauty of this renewable energy program, is where we took this 28 plus 19, which is coming to the rural areas, deep rural areas in the country. And it's really something to see. The solar leader program, there is under the first phase, we recognize that in the same as 2,000 direct jobs have been created in terms of the installation of it. Also in the backstream, some of the products have been manufactured locally because of our plumbing industry. But in the phase two, many more direct jobs will be created, and as indicated there, 3,500 of that. I think what is what's also important that we also just take note of the fact that if we talk about different technologies like Spencer Salwood uses and electrification, which is the next one on the screen, it has different impacts of different energy engagement. On electrification, for instance, we have a long history of electrification countries, so it's very easy to make a determination and determine what is the number of jobs that will be created. But per year, we are ensuring 8,000 jobs through the electrification program in the country, just as an indication of delivering around 220,000 connections per year. If we move to the effect of what the petroleum, and specifically the retail part of the petroleum industry, is creating, it's that around the fact that the Department of Energy have increased the rate of license issuing of license from 90 days to 60 and now to 30 days, that loosened up a number of jobs because of that efficiency increase of the department. And it's indicated there 5,000 direct jobs have been created in increasing our efficiency. In general, Chair, around 60,000 plus workers are employed in the retail part of the petroleum business. And my apologies, the part below that is just a repeat of the previous, it's a copy and paste slip of the finger there, so apologies for that. Another issue that we want to end off with in terms of job creation is on our IEC, so Integrated Energy Centres. Those are centres that we, energy centres that we created throughout rural areas to ensure energy access in rural areas, but also to establish businesses for the community. These 60 temporary jobs being created and 10 permanent of these 10 ICCs that we have established. Yes, as Mr. Mercabella has indicated, we have problems there. But what I must say is that what you see also in this is that people that haven't been exposed to business skills get this exposure, and skills are built in these areas, not only access to energy. The next one that I want to touch on and you pull out is the specific reference that President made to the development and the fast tracking of infrastructure backlogs in Northwest. Now, in the Northwest province. Now, if you look at that is directly linked to the SIPS program. SIPS 1 is on Northwest. So I think it's important just in terms of this one is that, and again, Chair, I need to apologize, the first two paragraphs are actually from the previous section, so it doesn't belong to this section. So the last paragraph is actually speaking to this point of Northwest. But just in terms of the backlogs of electricity in that part of the world, ESCOM is currently building a number of high voltage lines to Northwest to increase the supply to that part of the world. But from our side, for this next financial year, starting April this year, we allocated 11% of our total electrification budget to Northwest. Although the backlogs in terms of the general backlogs in the country is 4.5%, so we nearly doubled what is the backlog vis-à-vis the allocation to assist in this. So we in par in terms of this specific request. Then the reference that's been made on the next page 21 on the National Development Plan and in specific service delivery aspects. In terms of water, electricity, public transport, etc., I think it's just appropriate to mention that for us, in general, if we talk about access to electricity, that our electrification program as it is delivered now is delivering in a sense of 220,000 connections annually. But if you look to what it needs out there, and it has been alluded to also in the first presentation, is that we actually are chasing a runaway bus. So we're not we're delivering on what is the growth in households per. So we need to relook how are we doing with our electrification program? Because we can't carry on at a rate because we're not making the impact we're supposed to make. And hence why we have developed a new electrification roadmap, and it can be said, yeah, just another strategy. I can assure you, and I also want to make the offer, Honourable Chair, that we would love to come and present this new strategy to this committee. We have finalized it now, and we modeled around what is in the context of African requirements, and also in terms of the financial obligation that's there, what is feasible. And it is feasible that we can ensure universal access to electricity by 2025, that each household in the country will then have access to some sort of electricity. It either be grid or non-grid. And I don't want to go into the details of that, but I'm more than willing, and I'm sure you would love to come and share that whole program with you, and also how we come up with the models. We also had, and I must say that's also one of the projects that have been registered with the PICC on the SIP 8, which is looking at access to electricity, and this forms part of that, and also has the blueprint for that. And to end off around this, Chief, that if you look through the world, and also Africa, if you want to be successful with a major infrastructure program, you need to follow a recipe. You can't bake a cake, you can't become a master chef if you just throw the stuff together and hope it will come out good on the other side. And with all respect, I think that's what one of the mistakes we observed. Because what we did, and sort of interrupt myself, what we did is we literally put up the mirror in front of us and says, what are we doing here? Are we really successful as we think we are? Yes, we are successful. I think it's, if you look through the world, it's one of the most successful programs. But it's not reaching the goals which we're supposed to reach. And if it doesn't reach, why? And looking into the mirror, I think the one issue that we missed, we didn't have a blueprint. It sounds shocking. We delivered that amount of connections, but we didn't have the full blueprint. So if we want to have universal access in this country, we'll have to have a blueprint, a recipe. You have to start with your flour and with the end with your icing sugar. You can't put your icing sugar before your flour. And I think this is one of the mistakes we make. And this is a program, and sorry if I jumped the gun, but that, and if we're not going to follow that master plan, we call it the master plan, we're not going to be successful. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be screaming. There's going to be shouting at us. But if we not keep with our recipe, we're not going to get universal access. And this is what this plan is all about. We're not wasting money. Actually, by the way, by starting this new strategy, we already got efficiency gains on our electrification program without adding one cent. We're going to get 15,000 more connections in the end of this financial year because we went into the hardware of the program. But that's just some flavor of what we're talking about here. I think if you said, comes back to the State of Nation address, the President also made reference to over 670 kilometers of high voltage lines that have been erected. If you travel down to Durban from on the N3, you can physically see some of it. You can see that the sun is shining, it's really glittering in the that's part of the 675. But on top of that, which has not been mentioned, I want to mention, is that as part of our electrification program, we also laid more than 1,200 kilometers of low voltage and medium voltage lines. We erected and upgraded 28 substations in the country. Around that, 6 have been newly built, and the other 22 have been upgraded, meaning upgrading specifically for electrification purposes, not for upgrading under the ANM program, but for electrification. Chair, the next part on the spending on the renewable energy program, it's left open here because I did dealt with some of it earlier with those slides on what we have done, so it didn't fit into this small table. The same for the next one, just to mention that this whole renewable energy IPP program forms part of this green fund and initiative. I think the next one on slide 23 is the solar water geyser, where reference has been made that 315 solar water geysers have been installed up till the beginning of this year. We went back and we actually remember some of these inputs are given earlier, but if you're on a real-time check, it actually have increased again, and it's actually to date it's 351,000. That's only due to the phase one program that we launched. There was also a contribution from the Department of Energy where we also grant funded installations. There's also municipal programs and private programs, grant funds, and it's all of that together that brings you to this program. If you just look at the ESCO program, I don't know if figures are on the front, you know, the DOE program, it is not that figure, but it's a combined figure of all of these solar water geyser initiatives that have been implemented in the country. The president also made reference to the fact that more than close to 200,000 connections have been made. That also, I must indicate, is a rolling number, because when the question has been asked, it's for the calendar year ending December, but as it is with infrastructure programs being implemented in deep rural areas, sometimes you receive the information connections or area has been energized, then you ask to verify that. So you have the information that in certain area, year 500, late 20 connections have been energized, but you have to verify it. So each day or each week you verify, and that figure will grow. So you'll see that the current figure as of last week is 209,000. So it is growing. The figure we gave through at that point in time to the presidency was 203,000. So it is growing because of it, as the connections are coming in. It's been completed in the previous year, but the verifications is coming in. So this is a breakdown of the difference between ESCOM municipalities and non-grid in terms of this period, and that's where 209,000 is coming from. We normally wait a year to finalize really the final figures of the previous year. So then it will be, according to our calculations, will be above 200. We aiming at 232,000 connections, where we got budgeted for 250, and that increase is what I referred to earlier by just implementing more efficient monitoring and putting more stringent pressures on the utilities, municipalities, and ESCOM. So then the next one is where the reference has been made that 85% of South Africa have access to electricity due to the census of 2011. And I think it's a bit of a link here. I think there's three columns being allocated to this. And I will freely just speak to it. I think where this figure of 85% is coming from is from the fact that in the census, the question must be asked, what means of energy are you using for lighting? And of those, 85% of all South African households indicated they have access to electricity. But here I must emphasize that not all of those that have access to electricity is metered. And the bottom of that column tries to explain it. If you're going to look at the eight categories of households as defined by the census 2011, there's three specific categories that I want to highlight. The one is which is called houses and flats and rooms in backyards of formal households. And we'll find there's 423,000 of those. And then there's informal dwellings in backyards, which is 713. That's the stats from census 2011. And there's also a category saying rooms and flats on properties of large dwellings, and that's around 20,000. You add it up, you'll find it's around 1.25 million households included in the household numbers in the country as defined by the census process. Now, in practical circumstances, Honourable Chair and members, is that the majority of those households in backyards are not formally connected to the grid. What I mean is the household itself is formally connected, metered, but it's an informal connection being made from there to this. And on average, between 85 to 90+% of those households are actually supplied with electricity but not metered. The dilemma of that is twofold. The one is that your whole network design is designed for X number of households, plus a 20, depending on who the distributors are, a 30% excess for whatever reason. But now suddenly, you triple, in some cases, the number of households that the network has been designed for. That's why it's important to say, it's not needed saying that in the design, it wasn't designed that way. So although it's been regarded as having access to electricity, it's actually not fully electrified because it's not metered and it's not part of the network. The network is not designed. So we have to actually go back and upgrade those networks. So they have access, but they need to upgrade it to make it and then meter them. And why that's so important is that when we talk about fee-based electricity, those number of this 1.3 million households actually not qualifying for fee-based electricity. Because the metered house, the main stand house, has a meter that the electricity flows through there for the main house and these other households. And then they fall outside this bracket, which is defined as a household that qualifies for fee-based electricity. That's one of the reasons why we're not successful with fee-based electricity. And that's why I just want to allude to it here. We just put it in context, we'll see where the 85% is coming from. And if we look at that 1.3 million households that's been having access but not metered, and as I said, around 90% of them are not formally metered, we will see there's around 1.1 million of them not metered. If you say 90% is just informal being connected. And if you add that to the census stats, which says 2.2 million households in country are still without electricity, you come to a total of 3.3 million households. If you recall, you know, last year's presentation, that's also a figure we refer to constantly, is what we need to ensure they need to have access. So just put the 85% and the 2.2 million vis-a-vis the 3.3 million that we refer to in context. So it's not that we're playing with figures. I think that the census stats is giving us exactly what our stats is saying. So, and then also why we're struggling with free-based electricity. The next slide is just explaining what I just in verbal was saying. On page 28, there's a reference being made about crackdown on corruption and fraud. The department itself, through the leadership of Mr. George Nguni, has also ensured that we have policies in place in the department that is countering this and to ensure whistleblowing is live and active and there's policies around it. I think it's also important in the whole aspect that training has been given to the to officials in the department, but also the declaration each year in terms of as officials and your attachment, if or not, in terms of work done, being done outside of the department. It's a very strict requirement, and there's a certain date. George, I can't remember. I know there's a due date. So it's end of March. If you know by end of March have completed it, you can be shown the front door. So it's very strict and it's applied very, very strict in the department. And I think also with this whole IPP bit allocation, it has shown the department can deliver. The first round was 47 billion rands. The second round, which we're going to sign in the near future, is in the vicinity of the same. So we're talking about close to 100 billion rands tenders that have been allocated, and I can assure you, Chair, that it is scrutinised by various independent entities, and to ensure that this is not slipping into this programme in the department, and partly because of these policies. The next one, in terms of the payment rate. I think it's a very important. The issue about 30 days. 30 days, I think, was always the norm in industry, and it's been taken up also by government. I think it's very important. Although we in the department are adhering to it, but I must say there are always challenges with it. It's one thing to say I have submitted a claim or an invoice, but it doesn't say that invoice has just one letter or one word on it or just one figure. You can't process it. And honestly, especially on our SMEs, there's sometimes so lack of information on what is in invoices. And then you can't process it. And then it's just forward and backwards, forward and backwards. So I don't want to excuse if we don't pay our suppliers. Just say there's two sides of the coin. And I think it's also, from our side, we're not too deep in trouble with this. Those that we are in trouble, there's good reason for it. But also said that there's also another side of the coin, these challenges for government. Because we ordered it, and what we pay, we need to make sure that the task is delivered according to the tender order, the description, and that the right product is being received. The next one, quickly, is on, in terms of the role of SOEs, certain companies and entities, to ensure leadership in terms of skills built. Now, luckily for our department, we attach to various of these CETAs. The most important one is the energy and water one, which we are not only belonging to, but also serves on the board. There's some of the colleagues that serves on those boards. And we get very good cooperation. Yes, there were some challenges, and a lot of them has been addressed. To develop skills. I can just also mention, Chair, that for the last couple of years, the electrification program have trained a number of engineers. At one stage, we had 80 engineers that we trained. Right now, there's 53 of them that we're training in terms of giving the access to the electrification program. But I think also is that it's a program that needs to have resources, otherwise it's not good. The next one that we extracted from the address is the whole infrastructure champion of South Africa in terms of SADC and in Africa. I think it's important that we agree, a strong supporter and contributor in NAPAD, specifically on PIDA, where it's focusing around infrastructure development in Africa. We participate very strongly and give guidance there. In the SADC environment, we thanking a strong leadership on a regional infrastructure development master plan, and there's various programs that we're involved with. Some of them are active, some of them is just some ideas, but the most important ones is the one around Gran Unga Hydro Program. I can't mention that there's some progress, good progress being made the last 2-3 weeks around this program, and there's excitement around it, and there will be in the new course a formal announcement being made around this program. We're moving forward, and then also upon the gas pipeline one. But this was also part of again, I want to pull it back to SIP 17, is focused specifically on regional engagement, and we're fully in line with that. The next one is a reference to the BRICS summit in Durban, the 27th and 28th of March. So it's around the corner. So this time it's going to be held in South Africa. There's behind the scenes hard work going on in terms of the Tekweni Declaration, and also it dovetails with the Delhi Declaration. Energy is high up on the agenda for BRICS, fifth BRICS meeting in Durban, and so our colleagues are working hard on making sure that the energy strategies and the energy work group is capacitized efficiently and that we make our mark in that respect. Yes, we are a small player, but we are the binding factor also in respect with this. The next one, Chair, just to... it's a rough ending. On those activities that we extracted from the State of the Nation address, Chair. Quickly, just in terms of our allocations that we received from Treasury for very specific projects, not general, just in terms of the Sarawak Giza and Inefficient Program, and then the general Inefficient Program, allocations for this financial year coming, in the next outer 2 years, that's been indicated there. Also the one for the Integrated Electrification Program, that for this year, it went up to 3.8, and I just need to mention that amount need to be subtracted, 320 million need to be subtracted from there, because it was built in 2 years, also the ADAM program, where it's infrastructure upgrading. So for education, it will be 3.4, something 3.5 next year, and then year thereafter 3.4.1 and 5.8. So it's a steep increase. We're very excited about that, and it links with the electrification master plan that I referred to earlier, which National Treasury have seen, and they're happy about that. Just in terms of way forward, I think, Chair, honorable members, it is that, as you can see, our programs, our annual performance program of the department is aligned with the NDP. But we also want to link it to the PICC and the SIPS programs. We, honorable Chair, you made reference to 3 SIPs. If you analyze the 18 SIPs, energy is involved in 11 of the 18 SIPs. 11 of the 18 SIPs. 4 of them we lead, and 2 direct and 2 co. So it drains, put a lot of drain on our resources. Remember when this was announced, when implemented, the department structure wasn't really structured around this. So it put a lot of pressure on us. But it all has to do with the fact that we need to make sure that the National Development Plan is implemented effectively, and our strategic plans also aligned with it. We also have a meeting with the NDP. I'm not sure about the date, but it is there's a meeting, strategic session being set up with them to make sure that what our understanding is of some of the details in the plan is correctly being captured by our APP. And then that basically brings me to the last one, to say that being said, there are challenges. And I think Mr. McAvella ended off to say that skill shortage is a serious aspect, financial resource challenges. And there's also a lot of them outside of our control in terms of price increase pressures that cause also pressure on us to make sure that the industry is more efficient. That being said, we have been and we will align and make sure that our delivery is in line with what has been specified and been set by the President. I'm not sure that's our contribution.
Thank you very much. Is that all? I see your caller seems to be itching.
Yes, I think Chair, he needs to. There is an exciting program that I thought to be important for him to share with the committee on the skill issue.
I know it always brings exciting. Okay, over to you, Babangu.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. But firstly, before I say anything, I really would like to tender an apology. Normally, you know, as we come, you know, as Team Energy, you are aware that Umi Zungu, you know, is always among ourselves. But she's off sick now. She is at home, and we are really praying hard for her speedy recovery, because we can feel that she's not among the team. So I just wanted to register that, because it was not captured. Chairperson, be that as it may, yes, capacity is a challenge, not only within the department. Chair, as you know, we've made a number of presentations relating to our capacity requirements, but because
because of the opportunities that have availed themselves to us, like really participating in the CETAs, I must indicate that yes, the Department of Energy does have representation at both you know, the CETAs that are relevant to the Department of Energy, and prior to the implementation of the new framework by the Minister of Higher Education, there was a meeting between ourselves and the leadership of the Department of Higher Education, and there was agreement that for the implementation of skills initiatives to be effective and to be real, the DOE has to take ownership and to ensure that the highest levels in the department do represent the department in the CETAs. That was done. The Chief Director for Human Resource Management and Auxiliary Services is representing the department on the Energy and Water CETA, and I am representing CHETA on the, I mean, the department on the CHETA board. But sometimes they refer to it as the accounting authority. We are also serving in the committees of, you know, both CETAs, and we are very happy and excited to report that both the CETAs have accommodated our sector, you know, critical skills needs in their 5-year sector skills plans, and the accounting authority has endorsed that. We are awaiting approval of these 5-year sector skills plans by the Minister of Higher Education, which is in line with the regulatory framework that was released by him around December. We are really happy, Chair, to say that all critical areas within the energy sector have been catered for in both CETA's six skills plan. Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, that's quite exciting. I'm sure honourable members, if you could just refresh our memories. We've had the quite a number of CETAs coming to present to us, and obviously are still going to monitor their performance given the demand, you know, that we have rolling out solar water heaters, driving directly two of the four main SIPs where we're directly involved, but obviously taking into account the 11 that we're involved in as well. No, that's fairly encouraging. It's quite encouraging, in fact. Thanks very much. Thanks very much. And also, if you remember, we just allowed things to go through, but the report about our own CETA, the Energy and Water CETA, wasn't, to put it mildly, it wasn't exciting at all. But of course, we caught them midway because they are still in a phase of turning around. You know, I just felt how I wish we could have been engaging with them even earlier so that we could have put more pressure, you know. Because when you compare with the cities like the Mercedes, and Chieta as well, and Chieta, you find that they are stars ahead, you know, compared to a demanding area like ours. But in any case, so just a comment. Can I allow honorable members now to go for questions? One thing I've realized, Honorable Freling, the IRP was not answered. It's February 2013, just a few weeks away from March 2013. We're all yes, gentlemen, on that one. Over to you, Honorable Members.
Sorry. Okay, let's do this. Can you fire questions, then you take a break? Give them time to prepare for answers.
Thanks, Chair. It seems like Fridays are the day where we tend to kind of take a broader overview and discuss some bigger issues, which I think is a good thing. You mentioned the fuel price. Now, this brings into a big discussion around what the future is around our refineries, but also around our transportation sector. And you said that, we're going to experience a massive 80 cents increase. I'm just interested as to what is driving this global price. My understanding, and I've stated this before, is that I think we've reached a certain position with regards to oil production in the world, whereby as soon as the global economy starts to get going again, supply struggles to keep up. And it kind of provides a bit of a trip switch to the global economy. So as soon as it reaches over $150 a barrel, then you start to see the global economy tank again. So I think the lesson for us as South Africa, though, is that ultimately if we want to avoid that trip switch in our own economy, we're going to have to find ways of slowly weaning ourselves off oil, as difficult as that might sound. The issue, I'm interested, you said that you want the fleet to go diesel. Are the two not related to each other, though? We're still dealing with crude oil. Ultimately those prices are going to be related in some way, and you are going to see an increase there. So surely what we should be looking at in terms of future is either compressed natural gas, which is something which should be, form part of your kind of gas master plan, or we should also be looking at electric vehicles. I know it is still quite far in the future, but is this not something that we can kind of push ahead a bit faster, and what should we be looking to do with regards to making that a reality? So that is something I'd like to hear your views on. The exploration of oil and gas and, as to whether we use shale gas, that's still going to be another 10 years away, even if we do find significant reserves of shale gas, which is not a given at this point. We'll have to see what comes out of that. But, my problem is that's not going to necessarily have an impact on the oil price or the price that consumers pay for oil at the tank. We see this with Sasol, for instance. Sasol can produce oil far cheaper than what other refineries are doing, but ultimately that doesn't get passed on to the consumer, it gets passed on to bigger profits for Sasol. How are we, even if we find our own oil and find our own gas in South Africa, how does that translate into a cheaper oil price for consumers? I don't think that's it might help us in terms of foreign exchange, it doesn't necessarily help consumers. So it's just, I'll be interested to see how you tease that out. Then just some of the other issues. The electricity price, where you talk about we need to look at it. Obviously, NERSC is looking at this at this point in time. Some commentators have said that, in fact, government should have got involved earlier with regards to Eskom and try to find some solution as to how we smooth the electricity price increases over a far longer period, particularly in terms of the debt that has to be paid back. That doesn't seem to have happened, and it all seems to be in NERSC's court now. But what is worrying, though, is that in ESCOM's application as well, they said that this only goes up to Sasina. Now, the issue is looking at the new build programs, and if they include nuclear in that, they're talking about a far greater increase. They're talking about a 24% increase year on year for the next 5 years. So the unknown entity here is what goes on after Sasina, and it brings me back to my first question is, are we going to review this IRP? Are we going to look at the feasibility of nuclear? And are we truly going to get to grips with those figures? Because that is the unknown quantity here which really needs to be dealt with. I welcome the INEP strategy. I'm really looking forward to reading that. I think that it's great that you made this a priority. And, Dr. Barnett, that we've been working a bit on these kinds of issues. So if we can get over some of the hurdles that I'm experiencing on the ground there, then this will be great. So I'm really looking forward to engaging with that and seeing how this will be rolled out there. And then just lastly, solar water heaters. I hear the figure of 315,000. The issue is, how much of these are low-pressure units and how much are high-pressure units? Because I think that we need to also be very aware of what our objectives are with regards to the solar water heater program. it's not just about getting hot water to people. I mean, you know, sure, that's a great kind of bonus to have, but ultimately what was spurring on the solar water heater program was taking demand off the grid, was an energy efficiency kind of initiative. Now, what I've noticed in the solar water heater program, and you said that the manufacturing capacity wasn't there. In fact, the cry that I got from manufacturers, particularly down in the Western Cape, was that the demand for particularly your high-pressure units never increased to the rate which they were expecting or which was promised by government. And that's where a lot of the manufacturing capacity was. We could produce high-pressure units. But now a lot of those companies have gone bankrupt because, in fact, they expanded their capacity, the demand never came, and they weren't able to support themselves going forward. So to what extent are we looking at? To what extent are we looking at how we actually shift the demand in terms of high-pressure units and not just do a simple rollout of low-pressure units? And I'd just be interested to hear your comments on that one. Thanks.
Yeah, a lot that Honorable Frayling says, I've also got written here. There's a lot of expectation from the department and us as a committee to really deliver on some interesting debates, hopefully this year. And you talk about the 20-year liquid fuel plan and all this kind of thing. Also just want to ask the question about the perceived 80% fuel increase and how do people see it playing itself out in terms of the impact on energy. The thing about dieselization, you spoke about that. And I'm just going to touch on the things because Honorable Frayling has gone into quite a bit of detail. I looked at it also from a perspective of gas being a more efficient, energy efficient and cleaner type of fuel. And yes, of course, we will be looking at shale gas, I suppose, eventually, but that is 10 years down the line. But what do we do in the meantime? How do we bridge the gaps in the meantime? You spoke about the lubrication plants in Durban and the job losses. How does that affect the jobs that we are creating? What's happening to those people? And I know that you're saying that the influences are coming from outside the country, or the negative influences are coming from outside the country, but it is a cause for concern. I'm very glad you spoke about depth and tenure and about upward mobility. I think it's a message that should go across all departments because it is true. Sometimes as young people tend to want to be upward mobile and don't have the depth eventually when they move into a new job and they leave huge gaps. So it's a conversation that you should be having with all your colleagues about that. I think it's a very good one. Something that really concerned me when you spoke about the safety in the energy sector, and you spoke about all ranges of things, has the department put something on paper, particularly to highlight this and to bring it to the forefront, because it's a huge concern. I mean, South Africa as a country, in terms of safety, it's a huge concern, but I mean, in the energy sector, it can affect so many more aspects of us running as a country. We spoke about transport, our workers, our service stations. I read daily about vandalization of copper wires and things, and I mean, it tries to get onto the Gautrain train and you can't because the copper wire has been taken away. What is the department doing about the cooperative governance, the three tiers of government? You did speak about it, and you said there's a need to break the silos. But has the department got a plan, or are you putting a plan in place saying, how do we address this? How do we get to the three levels of government and make this work for us? Obviously, we spoke extensively about the capacity problems, but I was very pleased that we're working so well with the CETAs and that we are training and we've got young people apprenticeships, one would call it, learnerships, yeah. But I'm really pleased about that because we definitely need lots and lots of those young people. There was just one or two other things. Just a question again about the job creation. We spoke about annually about 8,000 direct jobs are ensured. Now, are we talking about 8,000 this year and then 16,000 next year? Are we just talking about a continuous 8,000 jobs? Because that's just, it wasn't very clear to me, and maybe I just didn't read it correctly. Also very pleased about the constant conversation coming about out about local content, because to me that says that besides job creation, we're also going to be creating a whole lot of skills in order to support that. Just a question, what is the population of Northwest? Does anybody know? I'm just interested to see what we're putting into Northwest, and there's nothing wrong with that, I think we must. I was just interested what the population of Northwest is. So they look so sparsely populated. But I'm just asking. It's one of those just silly questions. and then you also the universal access to electricity by 2025, and you said you people are doing a strategic plan. Just when will it be concluded? And you did speak about the fact that you would present it to the committee, and I'm really looking forward to that. I know we spoke about this lack of blueprint elsewhere, and I'm very glad to know that the department has accepted it. They've said that you went in without a blueprint before, but now you're really looking at it and picking up on where the errors were. Also, rollout of the 315 solar water geysers. I would just like to know from where I sit, is there a study that's been done on the impact of the people's lives? What is the positive impact on people's lives there? And if we can verify those kinds of impacts, and then what was the efficiency statistics? Because you spoke about the high pressure and the low pressure, but what is it really? Or are we just putting things down and hoping for the best? You know, I know in terms of gas, we've given people different types of heating systems that's not being used because it costs people money, and so they just leave it alone. Chair, I think that's almost everything. I don't want to go into too much. And then, of course, the question for me always is that throughout Chair, will we be constantly informed and kept in the loop of the work plan and its alignment? And we don't have to come to the committee all the time, but certainly through our chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Prof, and then Honourable Freddy.
Thank you, Chair. As I indeed, I'll just make my comment and have some. I think I must appreciate the presentation despite the constraints that the research. That one was on yesterday, the budget is what they said. When you read this, you can see. And you refer to those important bills and you're pleading with us to run them. I'm not sure where they are now, so that we start running. And this upward movement with officers with skills. I thought there was not a response by the government on this, leading for examining education, where there was this constant concern. You are a specialist in mathematics, but you can only get a higher salary if you are a principal. And they end up changing that where you are, you can be able to write. I thought that was a broad general government perspective. I don't know. On page 8, it is the second bullet. It could be true, but it brings about a red light. I can't just imagine a business day tomorrow writing, South Africa faces possible shortages with very little new capacity can one claim. That relates to Nidupi and Kusile. While that could be true, I would appreciate if you throw in something to mediate that. Otherwise, it can be taken literally, bluntly, and everybody runs for cover, saying South Africa is reaching that stage where we're going to have that. Uh, think let me stop there and run away.
You'll be followed by an email response.
Thanks, Chair. I just thought of something. It's not really directly related to the sonar, but it is something that came up, in fact, last year at the end of the year and has come up a number of times. This issue of a household energy strategy. And it could be related to the INF as well, but I really think it's something that we need to focus on this year if we can. To put the kind of locus of our work at a kind of household level, and how do we provide the proper energy services, not just electricity, but other services, also in terms of reducing the peak load. And I'd just be interested to hear if any work is being done on that, and what that work is.
I was at March around the non-grid or concessionaire area because there is a target group that deserves to get into that area. I know in the past figures were not that helpful, or they were not a good cause for making a smile. It was done by concessionaire. How far are you in that area? And I also have a curious question. Very curious. Think we still have what I regard as low figures. Are you working out a way of massifying our figures to train? People talk about 500, 900, 1,000, but the demands are far higher than that. And I must use ESCOM as a model on that. ESCOM has got its own target, but taking from what they say, they've gone beyond that. Correct me if I think I'm stretching it a bit far. I'll take it with a smile. In terms of regional energy trade, when Mama Marwa some speech shared those things with us, she presented a picture that there are serious attempts to ensure that in the context of regional power pooling, regional energy trade being driven, or their intention to ensure that it gets enhanced. I say it because it's quite possible that within SADC we have different peak hours, which may be helpful then in order to share electricity during those peak hours. In terms of the silo syndrome, you did make reference to the Energy White Paper. Obviously, I won't claim much that I've gone through the White Paper meticulously, but if you could just rehash which section or a little bit about how does the Energy White Paper guide us on a model of cooperative governance. Changes to the regulatory framework. Now, changes to the regulatory framework in the various energy sources or a specific area. I know at that stage you were referring to liquid fuels. There's just a huge need to look at that, in various energy sector, within the energy sector as a whole, but the subsectors, let me see. I'll make any comments or suggestions later, I think, for now. The other one, SIPs. My precursor is that it's obvious that we need to apportion time to handle SIPs. But for now, I have a curious question. When we engage with SIPs as Team Energy, and there will be the means of getting some back out of our contribution, or should we capitalize ourselves, if I can use commercial terms, before we start contributing to SIPs? Because I thought there would be creative ways to tap from the very trillion, you know, one or another, in order to enhance our contribution to it. Because it's fairly fundamental. Even the whole infrastructure build itself, if we do not ensure that it has energy for it to be constructed, you know, to go nowhere. It's as simple as that. So instead of that creative approach in financing, taking into account our way. But by the way, I wish we were all here. I want to put it on record. I did try from our side to see if we cannot help the department to fix up the baseline problem. But the department declined that. Because we were going to engage with the Standing Committee on Appropriation. Because we were fairly alert and sensitive to the fact that as a department we started on a incorrect baseline. So I thought to contribute by ensuring that we engage at least with the Standing Committee on Appropriation, such that at least if we could fix and make sure that there's a consensus on the baseline from which the department should be built or financed, then as we roll out in the months to come, years to come, National Treasury will be aware of what should have been the correct baseline on that. I want to put that on record. Can you break for tea, please? Thank you.
is that which is when can I come up? Can we send it? Follow it. When come up can listen, this is not a presentation I could done. It was nice, by the way. It wasn't so obvious. It was like genuine chemicalness. Yeah, what? It was like, how can I put it? Out of any kind of over prepared.
Oh, I see.
But which you're just good. Nervous, mm. Which is natural.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what? Okay.
You don't care, so that presentation. And the immediate feedback that you get, I mean, in terms of the questions,
yeah.
And you, that's where you gauge the people who have actually been listening.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so now we have figured out. What were you before?
Then the survey of the company to a sustainable energy Africa.
Mm-hmm. Battle based Africa? Okay.
That's nice. We have questions.
It's very good.
I think most of them is the thing that I could, and I started going to pull to the end of the
month.
International relations and attending.
Committee on joint meeting.
The second one was the US, but also based on your relationship partner. Go on immediately after this.
Over to the department.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try and take them and in the order that they came, the questions, and then the ones that I perhaps don't cover, my colleagues will assist as well. I think the first issue on the price, the global price of fuel. The first thing I'd like to indicate is just to say that our price at the pump is based on an import parity pricing. And we take out the benchmarks that we use is really Italy, Singapore, and the Arab Gulf for diesel. So you may find that when something happens in Europe with the refineries, then the demand picks up and then the price, of course, follows. So what has happened is really, one, we believe that in North America, some refineries have started going into maintenance shutdowns. That's in preparation for the summer, the driving season in North America. So they tend to shut down the refineries now so that they start building stocks. So you'd find then that they then import, and some of the imports come from the Mediterranean. And because then there's a supply-demand imbalance, you find generally then the prices tend to pick up. So it is more a refining issue than a direct correlation with a crude oil price increase. But it does have an impact as well. So that was one reason. Then the other one is, as I indicated, economic growth that is predicted, and then of course there's an anticipation of an increase in the demand of crude oil. That then pushes up the crude oil price. The third one, of course, is the uncertainties in the Middle East, particularly Syria, still has an impact. And I think you will see with the car bomb yesterday, probably it will add a few cents today to the Brent crude oil price. And then Venezuela is another, it's been factored in by the market, but each time there is a mention of the health of the president of Venezuela, the markets then, I guess, they make their own conclusions, and then that then has an impact. I think it is true that we need to wean ourselves off oil. That, I think, it's in the long term, that's where we need to go. But I think we have to approach it in phases. And I believe that the dieselization is perhaps a quick win, in the sense that the engines are more efficient, and then you get the benefits of those efficiencies. Of course, the petrol engines as well now are becoming more and more efficient. But what then that means is that perhaps we need to phase out the older fleet of cars. Now that can be an expensive exercise. In the UK they did that and started scrapping and actually incentivizing people to buy more efficient vehicles. But I think it is, it may prove difficult for us to do. The second intervention would be biofuels. And again, biofuels, we have to accept that we do have challenges in as far as feedstock and water is concerned in particular areas, but it's doable. What perhaps is not happening is with the biofuels is we have not segmented the value chain to begin to say where do we get the feedstock, who does what, and all of that. And the program also sits between ourselves and the PTI, and perhaps that we need to work towards actually aligning our approaches in that regard. The third, of course, would be the gas, gas to vehicles. I think that the Gauteng city of Joburg is beginning to look at that very seriously. And of course, we would use the gas that comes from, in the short term, from Mozambique. And then I think the Minister of Environmental Affairs is launching the electric vehicle rollout in the next few weeks. So hopefully that will also then ultimately lead us to where we want to go. I just also wanted to address the Sasol issue quickly, that of the 700,000 barrels per day demand, that we have, because when we talk about our demand, we have to include Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland. The coal to liquid is at best 130,000 barrels. So it the economics of that would not quite work out in our view, because the rest of Sasol's refining capacity is crude at Sasolbeck. So it perhaps was feasible when they were producing 40-50% of the demand, but with where we are now, the economics may be a bit difficult to work out. And if we have a regulatory framework based on import parity, then we should stick to that for everyone. The gas price, I think one of the things we're going to have to do with shale gas or even natural gas, excuse me, I'm going to be catching a cold here, is we're going to have to look at the pricing of the gas, because the U.S. market has got a price, and perhaps, the East Africa may develop to a point where there is an East African benchmark. What is not helping, and I want to address the chair's question about the regulatory framework, is that in the countries where gas has been found, suddenly there's a change now in the regulatory framework. And then the developers are saying, well, if the game is changing, or there are changes now to the framework, perhaps let's leave this gas and we'll develop it a little bit later when they're finished with the revision of the regulatory framework. And I think that is something that we have to watch very closely, what happens with the regulatory framework, because countries want to assert resource nationalism. And I guess the developers are saying, well, when you invited us, you didn't indicate that you were going to change the rules as you go along. But at the same time, the people in the country, population is saying, this resource must benefit us. So there's pressure from the developers on the one side, pressure from the populace on the other.
In other words, rather let's refine the regulatory framework right now, or like yesterday, to create certainty for ourselves, for investors of all sorts, financial and also the actual practitioners, service providers, and for also our public. But yeah,
The MPRDA amendment actually, will assist in then making sure that there is a certainty, particularly for gas developers. The issue on the lubrication jobs, I think it's early days now, but all indications are that we can no longer compete with the European producers of lubricants. Because what has happened is the specifications, the users, vehicle manufacturers and so on, want high quality products. Our plants are old, and there are issues of technology that we also have to admit we may not have kept up with the development. But I think think the question then would be, does the country want to lose those jobs or invest in the technology so that you save those loopholes, or you ask the European manufacturers to say, come and set up instead, form partnership with the local loop manufacturers, and then you then can save those plants. But it's early days now. We are engaged with the matter because our point of departure is that we don't want to sacrifice those loop plants. On safety, what we are working on now on safety is CEF is going to be championing household energy safety. But I guess the details will be the ones that come and brief the committee on that. That's household. On security, we are engaged with the state security agency on a regular basis. As I indicated, we even go on raids with the Metro police to basically root out illegal selling of fuel. And one of the things that we have not discussed with Mr. Mguni is the danger pay, because when we go to those raids, we don't have the vessels that others have. But that is on the, and then on the theft of fuel, there is a task team working on that. And I think we wouldn't want to go into details, because then they would know that we are coming for them as well. It's a syndicate. It's a sophisticated one. It involves the workers at depots. It involves the truck drivers. It involves, so it is quite an organized one. But we believe we'll get there. On cooperative governance, I think one of the issues that is stressed in the white paper is that we don't have min-max in energy, because energy is a national competence. So what I was proposed is that we need to have some kind of regular interaction with the provinces and with the municipalities. And I think it's time that we revisited that, because we have not quite formalized that policy proposal. So we definitely need to do that. Mr. Mguni will talk to the skills. I think the Northwest population, I think, is my... I think I will leave it there.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, you are correct. We are doing our level best to ensure that we massify our training and intervention, having realized the shortages of skills within the sector. And like Mr. Matuela has indicated, we're trying to be you know, also very careful not to preempt the outcome of things that haven't as yet been really approved by our particular principles because of time frame. But you can be rest assured, Chairperson, like I've indicated, that the sector skills plans of the CETAs do make, cater for our critical skills needs in the sector. But internally in the department, I must indicate that we are massifying our training and interventions to an extent that we have received awards from Saipa Lama for massified training and interventions in the department. We are doing very well there. But in the sector, through the CETAs, we are also moving towards the same direction. The figures are here. I do have them in the sector skills plans, like I've indicated. We still are waiting, consideration by the minister. But internally in the CETA boards, they have been recommended, and we'll just wait and see. Thank you, Chair.
No, carry on, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will deal with some of the other issues. I want to start off by apologizing in terms of the question from Honourable Kremlin of the RP. I did indicate it here, and it was also in my notes. You will see I did mark it when I made a presentation and when I showed that slide on the determination. It's actually to be discussed here. My apologies, I didn't discuss it there. It wasn't planned that way. In terms of the RP process itself, although it's been called RP 2010, it was only approved in 2011. So the 2-year cycle is actually due this year. In terms of the process itself, the following. We held back slightly on it because the integrated energy plan need to be the overarching plan that we also need to make sure is in place. So we moved to that, but parallel to that, we have started the IRP, gathered some information. We're formally going to start with the process by July this year, and then to see it to be finalized by the end of the year. So it's not that we have forgot about it. It is the, we spent some of our time on the IEP. I also have to mention, Chair, that it's an expensive exercise, not in terms of rands and cents, that too, but in terms of resources. It really drains your resources. And I don't want to say we're not doing it. I always say you're not going to, there's not the IRP office sitting there with a host of highly professional people just waiting to do this. We have to kick it in and out. So it's a process that we are focusing on, and the process, it will start formally in July.
But somehow, you really have to have a core of people who deal with energy planning. Granted, the government as a whole is under financial strain, but somewhere, somehow, you've got to bite the bullet. I know it has to link with national treasury, it has to link with other things, but believe you me, I'm sure some of us have just seen recently the regulator in the UK saying that UK might join us in the queue or in the list of people who are going to face energy crisis. I don't know what's the cause, but I can speculate, amongst others, is planning. I won't elaborate because it's a call, it's inside, but just from my side, somewhere, somehow, at the expense of repeating, the department must bite the bullet and ensure, I'm not saying it has a fully fledged planning unit, but it has a core of people that just look at planning. Because obviously, the other thing is that you plan and you roll it out, but you monitor it, because you've got to, it's an iterative thing. You've got to refine it, And it's also this, interaction and mutual linkage between IRP and IEP. Okay, Honourable Fairley.
Just on that issue, I mean, my concern with this, though, is that there's talk from the minister herself that they want to put out a tender for the nuclear bill program in around about July this year. Now, my issue is that if we haven't done, in terms of what the NDP is asking for, is to look at the financial feasibility, which is best done through a review of the IRP process. If that's only going to be completed at the end of the year, then surely we're putting the cart before the horse here. I'm just interested as to how you will then deal with those issues that are brought up in the NDP with regards to nuclear if this review won't be completed in time by the time the tenders go out.
If I can just respond to the easier one of the interventions, the one on the permanence or core of people that are going to be doing energy planning. The restructuring that we've just undergone within the department basically puts us exactly where the chair is directing. We now have a policy and planning branch, so they won't be regulating. They will be seized only with matters policy and planning. So IRP, IEP, and then of course the policy development and the feedback loop again to planning. That will be done by one branch. And what has happened there is also the recruitment has focused on higher level skills. So it is the one branch with the highest concentration of PhDs in the department.
Sure, thanks. If I was putting it that there's not a permanent group, that the idea was that it's like building a house. At a certain phase of a building house, there's a number of people on site. But if you do painting, it's just two or three people. This is what I'm talking about. There's a core group looking after it. But when we do the final modeling and engagement, and suddenly it increases the need to get experts in. That's what I'm talking about. So we can't just have them all the time there. So they are there, and there's a core group gathering information, looking at it. And this also, I think, also need to be taken into fact that this is not a process that when we finish it, we're going to finish it very quickly because we're gathering information. We're talking about one, maximum 2 months, we will be finished. But then it has to take through the various approval processes, which is another 3 to 4 months to look at the previous record. So the inch wider time frame, as I alluded to. In terms of and up till now, IRP 2010 is still the guidance that we're using. And all policies and all issues that we deal with is based on that information and that approval. In terms of that's on IRP, the next one I want to try to address is the issue about the electricity price and government to get involved in the smoothing of this. And then very specifically, the comment that Honourable Trudeau made about that the current application of Eskom is just towards the completion of which is correct, because the process as it's been followed right now by the regulator is user are paid for electricity, so it's not when new build program is formally introduced then that will kick in. So there's no, unfortunately or fortunately, a kitty that's sitting somewhere where we deposit into for future work program. So that does put a serious challenge. And doesn't matter what new build program, if it's nuclear, renewables, which will be there, which is coal 3, 4, 10, there will be an increase because of the fact that your newly implementation cost is much higher. So irrespective of what technology you're talking about, unfortunately there will be upward pressure. So that's reality of life. It's the same if I have an old BMW that I bought 12 years ago at a certain price and I want to replace that now. The monthly installment is much higher than what it was 12 years ago. It's exactly the same principle. In terms of INAP and the nullification strategy, yes, as I said, we will share it, and I think it's important that it does address the whole balance between grid, non-grid, rural, informal settlements that haven't been previously been addressed by our plans. It's also alluded to in the presentation on the research of this committee that electrification informal is a challenge. It's also been tackled as well. The next question on the solar water geysers in terms of 315 and if it's high pressure or low pressure, these figures, which is only referring to the low pressure, because that's the one that the government is referring to as grants that's been implemented and been shared. On the high pressure side, that's a commercial engagement where the individual household entity is looking up that, either between himself and his the utility, or between himself and normally an insurance entity. So those figures are all for low pressure units. The question then around the effect on energy efficiency, it is a very difficult one, because you would have to in advance make a measurement of exactly the total consumption. With the majority of these households is either newly electrified households or households with very low consumption, which makes it very, very expensive to make those sort of measurements beforehand. Calculations have been done, theoretical calculations, and we are now busy with the process of a monitoring program that we run tests on, where we installed monitoring units in various households throughout the country. And we're gathering data. We didn't have that facility. We have just started with that now. It's also the same facility we used then to track the rollout of our solar water geysers, because up till now it was a paper exercise done through a manual walking to house to see if the solar water geysers have been installed. We're going to move to more electronic monitoring system, which also then has a double advantage. You also check on the consumption of it. The last comment question from Honourable Kralin was in terms of household energy access and not specific electrification. Yes, we're looking seriously to that, and it is some pilots running to where, for instance, you just bring light through PV solar home systems to also bring biogas, biomass assistance in terms of energy carriers. Right now, really, with our concessionaires, which supplies the PV systems, they have energy stores throughout the areas where they supply and maintain these systems. They also supply LP gas, open up that component of additional energy carriers. I think that deals with the questions from Honourable Fraylin. Move on to the questions in terms of and my apologies, Honourable member, I didn't got a surname, Ferguson, my apologies. Honourable Ferguson, the questions that the comments that I just alluded to, the first one, which is a general one, in terms of the three spheres of government and the level of engagement there. It is a challenging one if it comes to energy, because energy and especially electricity has a specific local government and national government function. So provincial government is not included. So to have a coordination between three spheres of government is a bit problematic. The second issue is that as a department, we are facilitating and charts of policies and strategies for delivery and the usage of electricity. But local authorities are supplying a basket of services of one each of one of those is electricity. So the engagement is either via the line function department, COPTA, or directly to the municipality in terms of a specific aspect of energy efficiency, electrification, and so forth. So the level of engagement is much more direct than cooperative, because the fact that province is not really involved. Sometimes they're involved in terms of giving assistance where there's lack of capacity within municipalities or not coherence. The question on job creation and very the very specific comment, which I smiled because you picked it up very nicely on the issue about ensuring 8,000 jobs for electrification annually. But why say ensuring? It is not the cumulative effect. So each year when we do receive funds for 200 plus minus 1,000 connections, it reflects 8,000 plus minus jobs that have been secured. So it's not next year another 8,000. It's to keep those numbers going. Plus then the secondary spin-off of employment. The population of Northwest, it is 3.5 million out of a 51.7 million population. So 3.5 million people in Northwest, 1.06 million households in Northwest, and of those, around 150,000 are not electrified. Just to give you some data. At least here you can see we're using our stats information. In terms of the solar geysers and impact on people's lives, formal studies, there are research entities that's busy looking at that. We from the Dwarton side didn't got first-hand involved in making use of those information. We are, as part of this monitoring process, is also want to cover that. So there's no formal report or studies that we have as a department on this, except the individual feedback and engaging with individuals when they first receive this sort of energy for free from the sun, the effect of that on the people's lives. The question on the regular feedback from the department on the APP, it does happen. I mean, the chair keeps us on our toes with that, so we are regularly feeding back to the committee. Chair, I'm just going to take the one question I just referred to electricity from Prof. On the question that you referred to page 8, where there is a bullet making the comment around Kathile and Medipe, and says the comment on this slide is, until the next baseload generation capacity has been commissioned, South Africa faces possible shortages with little new capacity coming on stream. And the concern is that, you know, are we dealing with this beyond these two, when the two power stations come online? So I think it's also important, just need to point out that those two power stations, Dupe and Kathile, total capacity is respectively 4,800 times 2, which gives you just over 9,500 plus minus extra capacity. But if we're looking to what is the safe margin on the bullet below that, you will see at that point in time when the full capacity of those two generators are online, we will basically be very close again to our level of balance between supply and demand, because currently we in economic downswing, our mines and so our furnaces are down. We also, through Eskom's engagement with some of the big consumers, signed agreements to keep some of the furnaces running very minimum. So we actually are not seeing the real consumption of what the economy is supposed to absorb. It's a mirror image of what is the reality. And if that kicks in, they can't kick in now, because then we're going to really bring the country to its knees in terms of energy supply. So one day, cut starts kicking in with growth. At 2017-18, when all the units of Kusile and Madupe is up and running, we will be back where we are now. Now, what are we doing about it? And I, on the next page, 12, slide 12, I did allude to the fact that the minister has, in December last year, under power shares in section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act, did the determination on various energy carriers to become to be bit into those space which has been allowed for him, to ensure that when we reach that point that there is some additional capacity. Also, if you look at the RP 2010, there's also some of the base loads that will then start kicking in, in the, depending on decisions to be taken now in terms of various energy mix of gas, coal and nuclear. Will then also be started kicking in from 2022 onwards. So then the questions that have been coming from yourself, the first one on an on-grid concession is, how far are we? Just in terms of the process itself, the concessionary period is effectively with 10 years, but it was 3 years it was stopped. So effectively 7 years it's running, and this period 51,000 of these units have been installed. I started off with 6 concessionaires, currently it's only 4, 2 of them pulled out. Part of the problem is that how the concessionaires operate is that the country is wall-to-wall licensed, either licensed to ESCOM or to municipality. But these concessionaires, when they want to operate within an area, they need to negotiate with the license holder. And a lot of the time, the license holder doesn't want to give off its customer base. And you'll find a lot of time they're not interested in these entities coming. So just for that entity to negotiate for a certain area takes months and years. So then they lose the initiative in terms of our allocations, because our allocations are running on an annual basis. So when they finalize the negotiations, the financial period has expired and they can't use that money effectively. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is that it's not a money-making business. These companies that are currently active, the concessionaires, is only active because they're receiving external funding, not from government, from donors abroad. And these donors are mostly from Europe, where they just use it as an offset of the social responsibility, and they offset it into Africa, into South Africa, and they then supply them with financial grants. That's the only reason why they're still up and running. That being the background, I had alluded to the fact that we developed a notification strategy. Part of this is to say that the current model is not working perfectly. We bring a new model on the table. They need to run the different principles. And also very importantly, in the master plan that I referred to, it's been set up front which areas under the current conditions, because the master plan will also be updated each year. So in the current situation, which areas are the earmarked for non-grid. So it makes it much easier. The concessionaires as well as the ESCOM and the municipalities know exactly which areas is earmarked for non-grid. Either the municipality and ESCOM is going to do it. ESCOM is not in, it's not in the business. Some municipalities are willing to enter that venture, or it will be in a newly formed concessionaire to do that. So it's much more easier, much more upfront, so everyone knows for this period, the next 5 years, this area is not going to have grid electricity. So we will service that with a non-grid, and as grid migrates, we take it up, we move it on to another area until we finished with the notification. So so I think that is just in a very high level what is the situation of the concession is. The question on the regional energy trade and how to use that as an offset to assist us with our own shortages, because you can move the peaks is not at the same time. It's correct, but it is more than that ingredients you need to make a pool or an interconnection to work. Just to mention two, the one is that you need stable interconnecting grids. which you don't have at the moment. Our grids are very limited interconnected. That's the first one. The second one is that you need to, for such a grid to operate, you need generation stability throughout the grid. And that also don't have, because of the fact that the grid is not fully developed, on the other hand, the generation supply in our neighboring countries is far from supporting such an arrangement. So it's a technical challenge, and then also these countries don't have a plan. So it's difficult if we plan from our side. Now we're going to roll out, and we're not getting the same sort of planning. Then your network is immediately under stress. So it makes it a very technically a challenging thing. That's one of the reasons why, or some of the reasons why we're struggling. The last question on SIPs resources and the team energy, you know, need to tap on infrastructure funds correctly. So, Chair, the issue is just that. It is one thing to allocate funding for infrastructure and projects, but it's other thing to fund departments, because there's a drive that national departments and all government need to drive down the expenses, and that's why there's a baseline that's low, and the increases are low from that on, and we are being faced with this. You plan in advance, it takes you a year or two to get your new structures being approved and being funded, and this the whole SIPs, PICC initiatives have come in between in terms of our planning, so we have to use current resources to ensure to fill those gaps and to look after those 11 SIPs and the whole administration and everything that's attached. So I think I dealt with the electricity ones. I think there's one or two that I notice that just need some assistance from my colleagues. And I just want to mention that the comment from the Prof in terms of the various bills that's currently in the process. Where are these bills? And that's the one. And then the second one I also noticed, the comment on changes to regulatory framework that the Chair asked. What sort of energy carriers are talking about liquid fuels? I think that's you that I noticed that we haven't answered.
Well, thanks, and my apologies for not going through those. The MPRDA has been published for comment. The amendment bill has been published for comment. The gas amendment was with a state law advisor. It will now go to cabinet and then be published for comment. And so I guess in terms of timing, the MPRDA amendment is slightly ahead, which may not be actually a bad thing, because then whatever comes out of that, you know, the gas amendment bill can then act as a sweeper and deal with the gaps, if there are gaps there identified. The regulatory framework, I think in terms of, it's more of an impact on what is expected, because from the gas in the region. Because if one looks at the NDP, there's a lot of emphasis on the availability or discoveries that have been made on Awash, you know, in Mozambique and so on. But the challenge with those is, as I indicated, is that, for example, in Tanzania, they now are reviewing the regulatory framework. And that then will have an impact on how soon that gas can come to market. Uganda, I think they've done something similar, but I think they're at the end of that in as far as oil is concerned. Kenya, they've discovered oil, but they want to relook the regulatory framework. So when does it come to market? So all that I was trying to indicate is that sometimes the emphasis on gas prospects need to be tempered with what is happening in those countries in as far as the regulatory framework is concerned. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Bomba.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee and other members. I'd just like to respond on some of the issues that were raised by Honourable Krillin around nuclear. Firstly, I just need to indicate to the Committee, as been already emphasized by my colleagues, that our activities in the department are aligned with the NDP. I'd like to just mention that what the NDP is saying, it says we need a thorough investigation on the implementation on the implications of the nuclear energy, including its cost, financing options, institutional arrangements, safety, environmental cost and benefits, localization and employment opportunities, and the uranium enrichment and fuel fabrication. These are just some of the issues that the NDP calls us to do a thorough investigation upon them. Just to indicate also, Chairperson, that in line with this NDP call, in order to ensure that there is a thorough investigation as well as well-coordinated decisions on the nuclear bill program, Cabinet established the National Nuclear Energy Executive Coordination Committee, which is the NEC, that is tasked with oversight of and decision-making on the nuclear policy and the new bill program. It is worth to indicate also that this committee is led by the Deputy President of the country, and it is also consisting of the ministries which are of core relevance with regard to the implementation of the nuclear energy. Now, let's touch on what is happening at the moment. There is already, this committee is supported by sub-working groups that are busy developing nuclear energy strategies that inform decisions that get made by the committee. And as part of this preparation, and also in responding to the calls that are made by the NDP, is that the department is undertaking studies that are responding to the issues that I've already highlighted that were called upon by the NDP. And also what the department is done is, as part of the preparation, is that the department has led the self-evaluation, which has been conducted in accordance with the IEA INIR methodology. And this has been done jointly by the department with other government departments, as well as the relevant SOEs in the nuclear industry. What we then want to do with this is that we want to identify if there's any issues that would need major focus as we proceed with the preparation of the nuclear program. And after the completion of the IEA INIR mission, the department will receive a report, and then the department will then further handle the report, and the report will also be indicating if there's any particular issues that need further actions, and also taking forward as we are busy preparing for the nuclear program. Just as a comment that was made by the Honorable Kharelang that there is a procurement that is coming in July without feasibility studies, I just need to indicate to you, Chairperson, that as part of the work that is undertaken by the department in terms of undertaking studies, these are part of the studies that are currently underway. So there is still work ongoing around this matter. I think I'll stop there. Thank you, Chairperson.
We've got a meeting at 1. So we need to clear up. But just on that, we've always been thinking of pulling in the Department on Nuclear Energy, but the thing is, we also have our eye on the Deputy President's group. Because, I mean, you can't just preempt and find that his team is not ready to come. He's the honored member. Because everything is central around what he does. So it's just a comment that at this time when you feel you're ready to come and share things with us, it will be helpful. But it's really pointless. Only for that we'll say in a couple of times, no, we're waiting for the Deputy President's team. We're waiting for the Deputy President's team, you know. Rather, let's be patient enough. Unless there are people who want to chase the Deputy President. Thanks very much, Timinich, for this. Honourable members, you know, I must say from my side, I'm fairly sensitized about the enormity of the load, not just the challenges, you know, on our lap and ahead of us. One of the things that's coming very clear is how do we synchronize utilization of these different instruments. There's quite a multiplicity of them. Our researcher is listening, our content advisor is listening, the department is listening. I don't know where to start. I mean, from EPUB itself, you know, from EPUB itself, we've got to see, you know, how do we draw and integrate the work of EPUB, the infrastructure built, what else? Your skills are caught, your jobs are caught, okay, not much of a job, but your skills are caught in particular. You know, up to where we are, you know, we've got 6 now, I didn't know, I thought it was 3, 6, or is it 4, 2, direct, 11. We've got to say something. So somewhere, somehow, we've got to have this spider web, or this matrix, when I remember, that gives us a, you know, a clear framework as to what is expected of Team Energy. I say Team Energy in full, not only the department, but the department, the legislatures, the municipalities, because if I say provincial governments are not necessarily the mayor, but municipalities because of their role in distribution and the rest become part of the team. Your ESCOMs and any other related institution that either even if indirect but as a major impact on the work on that we do. Even in terms of demand. I think that the thought comes is rolling in my mind. And I don't think we've given an answer on that today, but we've just been sensitized. And I trust and hope even in the next parliament from next year, this will be a regular and even a more intensive practice that immediately after State of Nation Address, you know, we look at what are the implications, both direct and indirect. Because if you're going to put in, what's that railroad in Mpumalanga?
Surely it has a direct impact on energy, electricity. Whether for the better, you know, it changes the landscape and even the prices and things, you know. If Mafuta would be revived, you know, if there's another discovery. We haven't even said anything about the gas infrastructure because that's another big deal. I mean, if you could close your eyes and open, voila, with a magic wand, the country is crisscrossed by, you know, a gas infrastructure. I mean, we'd have a different situation. But what does that imply when we're having all these prospects, you know, inside the country, in the West Coast, you know, your Mozambique, your Tanzania, you know. I think to me, all what the State of Nation does is to trigger those things. It may not be a medium-term instrument. It's about each year. But, of course, it draws its, I mean, obviously the president, you know, takes into account through advice and things, the medium-term instruments, your METF, MTF, and your MTPBS, you know, all of those things. And I think what one was trying to do as well is to sensitize that, look, we need to be quite creative and see how we then use a funnel strategy, that at some stage throw all the things into the funnel so that we can have a consolidated framework at the end of the day. Because otherwise we can run helter-skelter. Every time one of them is put on the table, we run after it. And then another one comes, we run after it. But somewhere, somehow, we must say that all of them, what do they say to us? What do they, how do they impact us as team energy? And what do they demand of us? Because at the end of the day, that should be reflected fundamentally in two instruments. I like the STEM instruments, or two. IRP and IEP. Because if you do not craft the impact and the significance of all these various instruments in those two, just imagine what kind of Skokiana and Skorokoro programs are we going to have. Because there'll be trial and error, there'll be hit and miss, you know. You'll have to move back and forth, coming up to where we're asking you. Even the minister herself will keep on asking, hey guys, what are you doing? Why do you keep back and forth? Because you have to keep on changing your plan. It's very, very complex, but I'm sure the South Africans and committed South Africans will stand, will live up to that practice and that challenge, in fact. I suppose one of the, in some way, we'll be creative enough as well to take some of the topics and shift them to the energy stakeholders' meetings. Because we can't take everything to formal committee meetings because there's a lot in our plate as well. And as you can sense, bills are lining up, and you know, legislation, when it comes, we drop everything. I think on that basis, let me thank everyone who has come today. Surely, we'll have to make a follow-up on this one. How, I don't know, give us some time to think and as to how we creatively make a follow-up on what we have addressed today. Thank you very much, honored members and Team Energy. The meeting stands adjourned.